Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School and is about Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest in the area of George Gordon. The Law Hour Editorial Review is heard nationally, 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Plunge Protection Team when we come back. You know, the genocidal policy of Global 2000 and the New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, liberties, and property since Noah's flood. And that's not just my opinion. Jesus of Nazareth held that same view when he said in Matthew 24, verse 22, that except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive, unquote. Now, there are 64 of these life-threatening problems described in the Scripture detailing this New World Order and their Global 2000 genocide agenda. And the Scripture teaches preparation for this great tribulation, not just apathy and indifference. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to our God, the God of Israel, and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000 New World Order nightmare. Now, to do just that, why don't you call and write for our free General Law CD package. Remember, that CD package is 4 hours. It's commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, and it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, our Subsistence and Survival School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and then send an email request, if you prefer, for that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or call direct, 417-273-4967. The Plunge Protection Team. You ever heard that term? Well, George Stephanopoulos explained what the Plunge Protection Team was on September the 17th, 2001 on Good Morning America. I think it was more of an inadvertent blurting out of a top secret that he probably wishes he hadn't said very much about, but he did. And as I've said so many times, it's these insiders, the guys that are inside government, they're inside politics, inside the courts, inside the military, that can tell us, you know, what's really going on in there. Well, once in a while, a whistleblower comes forward. Now, Stephanopoulos is an elitist insider. He's not a whistleblower. But every once in a while, even a whistleblower makes a mistake. You know, Colin Powell was talking about Social Security and finding these terrorists. And he said, you know, in Russia, they don't have a Social Security system like we do here in America, which aids us in tracking down American citizens. Yeah, that's right. Social Security numbers are your national identification number used to track you down. I'm sure that Mr. Powell didn't intend to spill the beans that way, but, you know, things like that happen. Well, George Stephanopoulos knows all about the Plunge Protection Team. It is the secretive organization made up of Wall Street bankers and top administration officials whose job it is to come to the rescue of a faltering stock market. Now, here's the bombshell statement that an obviously nervous Stephanopoulos, once President Clinton's senior advisor on policy and strategy, delivered on ABC's Good Morning America on September the 17th, 2001, the day the stock market reopened after being closed for nearly a week because of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Now, the statement was barely noticed in the excitement of the time. So I'm going to quote the entire statement here in full. And I'm also citing it verbatim because Stephanopoulos blurted it out in the heat of that moment. Stocks were struggling that morning. And because no other person with firsthand knowledge of this organization is likely to ever repeat these words again. And perhaps the most important there's been, the Fed in 1989 created what is called the Plunge Protection Team, which is the Federal Reserve, big major banks, representatives of the New York Stock Exchange and other exchanges, and there they have been meeting informally so far, and they have kind of an informal agreement among major banks to come in and start to buy stock if there appears to be a problem. They have in the past acted more formally. Now, I don't know if you remember, but in 1998, there was a crisis called the long-term capital crisis, and it was a major currency trader, and there was a global currency crisis, and they, at the guidance of the Federal Reserve, all of the banks got together when that started to collapse and propped up the currency markets. And they have plans in place to consider that if the stock market starts to fall, unquote. Now, that was Stephanopoulos' comment on Good Morning America. Plunge Protection Team, they've actually got another name for that. Look, I forgot exactly what it is. We'll probably see that here in a minute. But it's got a function, it's got a purpose, and it was created by executive order. It was President Reagan who created it right after the October massacre. Remember the stock market collapse of 1987? I was teaching class right here that day in October. I think it was about October the 27th, as I recall, or something like that, 1987. One of my students was here from, he was here from Nevada. And boy, was he nervous. He was about as nervous as a whore in church. And he left that day as soon as we found that the stock market had gone down, I don't know, 500 points or so. He said, I don't want to get stuck in this economic collapse out here in Missouri. I got to get back home. So he left here that day. And it was good thinking on his part, because who knows whether or not there would be gasoline to buy on the road on his way home. He was here in a motorhome. He's going to buy a lot of gas between here and Nevada. So he made it. He got back home all right. And the banks got together, and they bailed out the stock market in 1987. They kept the economy from collapsing like it did in 1929. I mean, they stepped in there, and they prevented that. And I guess, you know, from everybody's point of view, that was a good thing. But you see, when you overspend, boys and girls, there's an ultimate end, and that's called bankruptcy. That's what happened in 1929, the ultimate end of the paper money loose monetary policies of the 1920s, you know, the roaring 20s, they call that. The ultimate end was bankruptcy. And we paid a price, and the price that we paid was the Great Tribulation, the Great Depression, not tribulation yet, that's coming, the Great Depression of the 1930s. Now, that wasn't very popular, and so now the politicians want to avoid that. So what they've done is they hired Alan Greenspan. Greenspan came in 1987, if you'll remember, and his job has been to prevent that, to manage the economy in such a way that we don't have these boom-bust cycles, that we don't have another Great Depression. And so they've staved it off and staved it off. And what they do is they keep borrowing more money and putting it into circulation, borrowing more money and putting it into circulation. And so Americans have been talking about the destruction of the dollar, the collapse of our monetary system. Well, boys and girls, that's not something that we're looking forward to. That's something that's already occurred, past tense. That's a done deal. It's been happening since 1933. You see, since 1933 until today, 2006, the purchasing power of the dollar has lost 97%. Now, I would submit to you that when you lose 97%, for all practical purposes, that's a done deal. That thing is totally destroyed. All you're talking about now is how do we preserve or salvage the last 3 cents? 97 cents is gone, destroyed, terminated, past history. The dollar is gone. The dollar as we knew it when I was a youngster is dead. And now we're in the process of figuring out, well, what are we going to replace it with? And so we're faced with this looming economic collapse, the collapse of the dollar. Well, just picture it. The Japanese are holding $650 billion worth of claim checks against us. The Chinese have about $350 billion. And then there's everybody else in the world, and they've got their billions on top of that. Then we have a national federal deficit every year of about $500 billion. The official number is $350, without counting the off-budget deficits, which totals another 300 or 350. It's really closer to 700. So let's just use their numbers, 350, and then you have the balance of payments deficit. Balance of payments, that's another $750 billion every year. All right, now, when you add all that up, we can't service the interest on the debt, much less the debt. So what we're doing is we're just printing up more money in the form of bonds, stocks, and loans. Banks are lending money. Checkbook balances is what these turn out to be. You know, you go into the bank and you borrow $10,000. They don't hand you $10,000. They don't give you a stack of $100 bills. They open a checking account and they put your dollars in this checking account. They hand you a checkbook and say, go out and write money. Well, when you do that, you put too many dollars chasing too few goods. So to give you an illustration, if you took all the money in circulation here in the United States, just all the money in circulation, that's all the money that you've got and all the money that I've got and all the money that Donald Trump's got and Warren Buffett and Bill Gates and everybody, all the money that all of us people have. And we all go down to Walmart or we go to Best Buy or Target or wherever you want to go. And we all start spending our money to buy the goods. You know, money in reality isn't something that you want. Money is something that you use to exchange for something that you want. You get rid of the money for the rutabagas and the pizza pie, you know, or for the six-pack of beer. See, if you wanted the money, you'd keep the money and you wouldn't buy the beer and you wouldn't buy the pizza. So when you're spending your money, boys and girls, it's because you don't want the money, you want the pizza and the beer. So if we all did that, everybody all at the same time, we would get 2% of our money in goods and 98% of it we wouldn't get. And we have this thing called just-in-time delivery. Boy, are we on the knife's edge. You know, when I was a kid, the C&V market had a truck come in about every, I don't know, maybe every month. And it was quite a sight, you know, they had these rollers, you know, that they'd have all these boxes coming out of the truck and these rollers, and the boxes come down these rollers. They had quite a crew out there, and they were putting all these boxes away in their warehouse behind the store. See, when I was a kid, we actually had goods in the warehouse. We went over to the C&V market to buy mayonnaise. Well, at the end of the day, when the mayonnaise was taken off the shelf, somebody would go back into the warehouse and get another box of mayonnaise and bring it out and put it on the shelves, you know. So the supermarket that we traded at actually wasn't a supermarket, just a little neighborhood market. It actually had the goods in the warehouse, at least a 30-day supply for their customers for a month or 2 months. Today, nobody does that. See, today we have daily deliveries, and Walmart gets a truck in every morning at 8 o'clock. When I go down here to O'Reilly's to buy auto parts, you can rest assured that it won't be in the store today, but it will be in the store tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. So they call in your order to the central warehouse in Springfield, and their truck goes around every night, all night long, delivering all those orders to all those stores. So you're just 24 hours away from your order. Or in the case of Walmart, all they have in the Walmart store is what you see on the shelves. That's all they got. And when they sell that out today, and their truck comes in tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, or whatever time it comes in, and they'll replenish just another one day's supply. That way they don't have any money tied up in their inventory. They don't have any money tied up in the warehouse. See, the C&V market, maybe they had $100,000 worth of goods on the shelves in the store and $200,000 or $300,000 worth of goods in the warehouse that they had to bankroll, that they had to finance. That was their cash, operating cash, their profit, their money, that they had tied up in the warehouse with jars of mayonnaise and pickles and mustard for 30, 60, or 90 days until the truck came in again. It's the way we did business. All right, now, today we've got this just-in-time delivery program, and today we've got a lot of money out there in circulation, but we don't have the actual physical goods in the store. Now, in the olden days, the banks would lend out their deposits. See, let's say 100 of us go into the bank and we deposit $1,000 each. Then the bank has $100,000 of our money in the bank. They used to have a reserve requirement of 18%. So they'd take 18% of that $100,000 or $18,000 and send that off to the Federal Reserve Bank in San Francisco. And then they would lend out the $82,000 that they had in the bank. And the reason for this reserve requirement is so that if 18 of us at one time ever came in and said, give me my money, they would have $18,000 to give you. That was their reserve. Today, the reserve requirement is 0.5%. So today, if the bank has 100,000 in deposits, they've got $500. $500. Now, if there's a run on the bank, and this is what happened in the 1920s and why all these banks went bankrupt, is because when people got wind of the fact that their deposits were in jeopardy, they rushed to the bank to draw their money out. Well, you can picture this. If your reserve requirement is 18%, on $100,000 worth of deposits and 30 people come in, you're $12,000 short, aren't you? So the first 18 people can get their money, the next 12 people can't get theirs. And when those 12 people go out on the street and say, well, I couldn't get my money out of the bank, then the next day everybody is lined up saying, give me my money. Everybody wants to draw out. And that's the way the world economy is today. The dollar is the de facto world reserve currency and it has no backing and there isn't any reserves. And if we all took our money and went into the stores to buy the goods that are, in fact, the reserves, the things that we believe that money is going to buy, if we all went in at the same time, like those 18 or 30 depositors, the stores would run out of goods. Then the people would run out on the streets and say, oh, my God, Walmart is empty. Now, that's not a very good scenario, but that's where we're headed. And George Stephanopoulos let the cat out of the bag when he said, well, President Reagan was smart enough to figure out that what we've got to do is we've got to prevent these crises from mushrooming into disasters. Just because we've got a problem doesn't mean we should have a depression. So they created this outfit called the Plunge Protection Team. That's not their official title, but that's their designated title. And so when the stock market plunges, they have what's called the repo pool. Repo pool. And every week it's reported in the International Forecaster. And this week it was around $110 billion. And when they leverage that out, that gives them over $200 billion worth of buying power. So this Plunge Protection Team, they can go out and they can buy stocks and prop up the market. If too many of you people get nervous and you start selling your stocks and the prices get depressed, the Plunge Protection Team with taxpayer dollars rushes in, buys stocks, and the market goes back up. Isn't that just real special? All right, now that ought to tell you a little something about the stock market. It's totally rigged. There's nothing free market about it. Furthermore, the stock market, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, for instance, the 30 blue chip stocks they call, contains companies like General Electric, General Motors, Walmart, and Microsoft. The only four companies out of 30 that are making a profit. The other 26 are all losing money. That's number one. Number two, of the four that are paying dividends, only General Electric and General Motors are actually paying dividends of 5%. 5%. Walmart and Microsoft are making profits of about 25%, but they're not paying out any dividends. So what that means is when you walk in and you buy $10,000 worth of Walmart or Microsoft stock, you're giving Microsoft and Walmart a $10,000 interest-free loan because they don't pay any dividends. And when you go in and invest $10,000 in General Electric or General Motors stocks and they pay you 5% dividends, that means that you lose $500 a year in purchasing power because inflation is running at 10% a year. And that's the low end. Now, why anybody would want to buy stocks is beyond me. I don't know. I didn't go to college and I don't have letters after my name, so I'm not very smart. But I'm smart enough to know this. I wouldn't get out of bed in the morning for a 5% return. And I hear these smart guys from college bragging about their 5% return, you know, compounded annually. And I'm just here to tell you that 5% is chicken feed. I don't know of any businessman who would do business for 5%. All right, now with that said, let's take a look at some other markets over here. If the stock market is manipulated by the plunge protection team, what about the gold and silver markets and copper markets and aluminum and palladium and all these other exotic metals and markets and so on? They're all controlled also. And after all, that's what we wanted. We don't want thou shalt not steal the Ten Commandments and just weights and balances, boys and girls. We want the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto from each according to his ability and to each according to his need, paper money, central banks, and an income tax. Now that's what we want, and that's what we got. So we now have what it is that we want. And I get calls here all the time, and people are complaining about the People's Republic of Michigan, and the People's Republic of California, and about this or that bureaucrat that's raising hell with me and my business. That's what I hear. And so we kind of need a solution. But before we get to the solution, we kind of need some understanding as to what the hell is going on here. So the first thing that you should understand is that stocks and bonds are commercial paper. Commercial paper are called Canaanite trafficking in commerce. Commerce is called Canaanite trafficking in the Bible, and it's strictly prohibited. Canaanite trafficking. In our Constitution, at Article 1, Section 8, we have a clause in there that provides for commerce. And Congress regulates trade, commerce, business, and industry as it affects the public interest. Right? So commerce is the exact opposite from property. Why we would want to participate in commerce is beyond me, but Americans love commerce. Commerce, of course, has profit and gain for which you have to pay an income tax. That's why I don't like commerce, because I don't like the income tax. So I stay out of commerce, so I don't have any income, so I don't pay any income tax. Does that make sense? So what I do is I stick with property, which has never been assessed or taxed in the United States, and ideally in property for increase instead of profit for income. You got to write those words down. You see, income comes from profit, and increase comes from property. Profit is taxed, and property is not. Isn't that just special? Now, since most Americans are involved in commerce, things like the stock market and bond markets and commodity markets and so on, then if these markets go haywire, if they collapse, it creates distortions in the economy. And then we have things like recessions or depressions, and those are very unpopular events, and politicians loathe those depressions and recessions, and they try to avoid the R word and the D word. You know, like the F word and the N word. You know, pretty soon we won't be able to speak anymore or converse, because we'll have all of these bans and all of these words. But you know, they're descriptive of events that transpire in everyday Joe Sixpack's life. Now, these market manipulations then are rampant and have been since 1987. And so people will call here and they want to know, well, how in the world does the plunge protection team influence the gold market or the stock market or the silver market or? And some of it has to do with supply and demand, and some of it has to do with perceived supply and demand, not actual supply and demand, but just what people perceive it to be. Some of it's just an outright lie and fraud, and some of it's real. Some of it's actual supply and demand working in the marketplace. But when supply and demand in the marketplace needs to be doctored, twisted, manipulated, or used in some way, then the plunge protection team comes in there and does that. They do whatever needs to be done to manage the economy. And while they're at it and they can manage it, they manage it to their advantage, which may be to your advantage or may not be to your advantage. That's why I stay out of those markets, because there's nothing in the market that's free. It's not a free market. And it's like a crap table, which is controlled, but the croupier doesn't control the number coming up on the dice. Now, if he was controlling the number coming up on the dice as well as the odds on the table, then I'd quit playing craps. That's why I don't want to participate in this stock and bond market, because not only do they control the odds, they also control the numbers on the dice. That doesn't appeal to me at all. So, in short, when they want to manipulate the price of gold, we'll just take a commodity over here. And in the marketplace, people were bidding the price up, and it reached $732 back in May. And so the powers that be said, oh my God, if this gold goes to $1,000 or $2,000 an ounce and these people just keep bidding the price up, it's going to create such a distortion in the stock market and bond market. People are going to want to sell their stocks and bonds and buy gold. And that isn't good for our business, and that isn't good for America. And that's not good for General Motors. So we're going to step into the market and we're going to manipulate it. And so in your mind, you're probably thinking about manipulating the market like the Hunt brothers trying to corner the silver market, or we're going to manipulate the market. So we're going to bring in gold and we're going to sell all this gold in the market and depress the price. Well, you need to understand that 82% of all the gold that's transacted in the world is called paper gold that's transacted on futures contracts. So for the Bank of England or the Federal Reserve or any of its proxies, and it doesn't have to be the Bank of England or the Federal Reserve making some pronouncement, it can be the ABC stock company or a mutual fund or a hedge fund, or it can be the Bank of America or somebody else. In this case, it's the Bank of England. So the Bank of England says, we will sell gold when it hits $752, and the powers that be said, we can't have $752 gold. We've got to bring the price down. So they said, we will sell you gold for future delivery next year, that is next May, for $685. And so the market immediately went from 752 down to 685 overnight. It was quite a little drop, or in a couple of days. Maybe it wasn't overnight, but a couple of days. All right. So they've taken it down. They've stopped its growth, and they have brought it down. Now some other bank comes in, or some other institution, and they say, well, we'll sell gold for next May's delivery for $675. And so they drive the price down $10 more. And they just keep doing $10 a day, every day. And they just keep driving these contract prices down for future delivery next year. They drive those down to where they've got them now, which is about $583 as of a couple days ago. So they manipulate that market. Now you're going to sit there and say, yeah, but what if the market goes back up between now and next June to $800? And they've agreed to sell you gold at $685. Well, here's what you need to understand. No gold ever transacts. Nobody has a stack of gold coins on the counter that moves from one side of the table to the other side. Put that out of your mind. All of these gold transactions are occurring on paper. It's called paper gold. And there's only 18% of us that have physical control or physical possession of gold. And the rest of the people out there don't have physical possession. They just have a claim on gold. See, that's the difference between having your money at home under the mattress and having your money in the bank. See, when it's in the bank, you have a claim on your money in the bank, but you don't have physical possession of it. When you've got it at home under the mattress, you have physical possession. Then when the bank closes, goes bankrupt or upside down or something, goes anywhere, you've got your money. And the rest of the people are standing in line outside the bank's doors screaming and crying, give me my money, give me my money. Now, the only people that can play in this arena are the people that have the power of the printing press. Because let's suppose that next May of 2007, the price of gold is $1,000 an ounce, and they agreed to deliver gold to you at $685. And so they're short $415. That's no problem to the Bank of England or the Federal Reserve. They just write you a check for the difference. You're not going to take physical possession of gold coins anyway. And you're not playing in the gold market because you want physical possession of gold coins. You're playing in the market, playing the long side of a futures contract. And the other side of the futures contract is the short side. There's a long and a short. And so to drive the price down, and then we issue a contract, and we agree to sell you the gold for $685, it goes to $1,000, and we just write you a check for your profit, and you're happy, you go deposit it in the bank. Now, you go out in the marketplace and spend that down at Walmart, and you drive that 2% of goods that are on the shelves even lower. And that's why there's only 2% of the goods on the shelves, boys and girls, and that's because you've got 98 times more money than you have actual goods. So the gold in the world, if you took all of the people in the world that are holding gold contracts, and if all of those people went in to the gold store in the morning and said, okay, give me the gold coins, they would be 37,000 tons short tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. That's 15 years production at 2,500 tons a year for the next 15 years in order to pay off all of that promised gold out there. But fortunately, most people out there aren't into physicals. That's the other side of the gold market. They're into paper gold. And so they're just taking paper. And then, of course, the powers that be, the bankers, the Federal Reserve, the plunge protection team, the politicians, they can control the price of gold. But, and here's your big but, one of these days, more people are going to ask for physical delivery than there is physical coins to deliver. And when that day happens, all hell will break loose. Because in the past, all hell has always broken loose when short bankers, you know, when tall bankers are short on their delivery of their deposits, and they get hung from tall trees, is the old adage. So people that are timid, cowardly people like yours truly here, we're afraid of these gold contracts. We're just real nervous about holding paper for fear that they won't be able to deliver on the contract at some point in time. So we take physical delivery, which is good for us because as long as the price of gold is low in dollar terms, then we can buy more of it and have more of those gold coins in our physical possession. When the economy turns turtle, we will have those gold coins. And when the prices for those gold coins are bid up to $1,000, $2,000, or $5,000 an ounce, we will have the physical coins. And the paper gold people will have their contracts that say that next year you can get delivery. Only next year when it's time to deliver and the Bank of England doesn't have the physical gold, they'll offer you your paper profit in inflated dollars. Kind of like the Weimar Republic, you know, back in the 1920s, where the mark just inflated into infinity. It just inflated until it was no longer of any value. When millions of marks would buy a loaf of bread. Today, a few thousand dollars will buy a house. But the day will come when $200,000 or $300,000 that the day will buy a house will buy a loaf of bread. And then we'll find out what the real value of gold and silver coin is worth. But for right now, the Pledge Protection Team can control those prices. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet, 7 days a week. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications so endorsed or recommended will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, while we're at it, this article comes from the International Forecaster. I'm on page 23 of the International Forecaster. It is the June 29th, 2006 midweek reading. If you'd like a copy, if you go to www.theinternationalforecaster.com, all one word, theinternationalforecaster.com. And the story was written by John Crudele, that's C-R-U-D-E-L-E, Crudele, I believe it is, New York Post, Tuesday, June 27th, 2006. Pretty good article, I'd say, giving us a little information here about the Plunge Protection Team, thanks to our good friend George Stephanopoulos. Now he goes on to say, the most important line is the one about the informal agreement among major banks to come in and to start to buy stock if there appears to be a problem. Well, over the past month, I've outlined in this column how Robert Heller, a Federal Reserve governor, proposed back in 1989 that the central bank prop up the stock market in times of crisis by purchasing stock index futures contracts. And I've also contended that Stephanopoulos confirms that these rescue missions were not undertaken by the government itself, although off-balance sheet funds are available, but by Wall Street firms acting as fronts for Washington. Okay, now watch how that works. Acting as fronts for Washington. You know as well as I do that, you know, just picture this. The stock market goes down, and so you and I want to do our part, so we rush in there with $10,000 and we buy some stock. Well, the guy that's selling is the guy that's taking our $10,000. He's transferring his Walmart stock or his GM stock or IBM to you. for your $10,000. What if the market goes down in addition to your $10,000, another $10,000? What if it goes from $50 to $40 down to $30? You know, you and I would take it in the shorts. Well, listen, the big banks, you know, they're not dummies. They're not going in there and buying those stocks in a down market so that they can lose money. You know, people don't get to be J.P. Morgan and Bank of America by buying high and selling low. This is a political charade. This is politics at its best. This is your government using Wall Street banks, J.P. Morgan and Citicorp and so on, to go into the market and buy those stocks to prop them up. Now, let's suppose that they come in with the repo pool. They got $100 billion, and they spend $30, $40 billion, and they drive the market up. Maybe they drive it up $80 billion. Well, they can come back in, and they can sell and take a $40 billion profit, can't they? All right, that's good. You're using taxpayer money to buy stocks. If they go up, you cash them in and take the profit and pay back the repo pool what you borrowed. But if the stocks go down and you lose money, you go to the Treasury and you just have them write you a check. And the Treasury then, in effect, is just printing more money and putting it into circulation, buying those stocks by just printing the money and putting it into circulation. Is that inflationary? Highly so. Highly inflationary. But, you know, it's like that bottle of Jack Daniels and a good cigar with a beautiful woman. It all costs money. And, you know, you got to pay the piper at some point in time. You know, when you drink too much the next morning, you got this split and headache and you feel sick and nauseous. And that's the penalty that you pay for all the fun and the good times you had the night before. Remember? Remember all that fun you were having at the party? The hangover comes the next day. Now, we Americans are on the verge of a big hangover. You know, we've had a hell of a party. Since 1933, we Americans have been just party, 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 having a hell of a time. And now, boys and girls, it's about time for, you know, the cows to come home, for the chickens to roost. Now, your government is working mightily on your behalf right now to prevent this inevitable collapse of the economy and the loss of political stability and then the national captivity. They're doing what they can. But it's like the Titanic. You know, you can just pump water like crazy, but the water's coming in faster than you can pump it out. Now, it is true that if the water's coming in at 10,000 gallons a minute and you're pumping it out at the rate of 8,000 gallons a minute, then you're only sinking at the rate of 2,000 gallons a minute instead of 10,000 gallons a minute. So by all means, let's keep the pumps pumping. But boys and girls, what that means is that instead of sinking in 2 hours and 20 minutes, we're going to sink in 6 hours and 40 minutes. It isn't going to prevent us from sinking. It just means that the sinking is going to occur at some future date from where it would occur if we didn't pump. Now, the boys are out there busily pumping, and God bless them, I wish them the best. But the ship's still sinking. And this ship isn't going to be salvaged because, you see, your debts are too high. And besides that, Joe Sixpack isn't about to get up off the couch, shut off the TV, and pick up a book and find out what the hell's going on, because he doesn't want to know. Joe Sixpack don't want to know. And so I don't want to wake Joe up. Let's just leave Joe sitting over here watching Three's Company or watching some sitcom over here and entertaining himself. And when this happens, it'll happen. And he'll expect that FEMA or some government agency, welfare, food stamps, or the Department of Agriculture, somebody is going to come over here and bail his chestnuts out and feed him, clothing, and housing, like government has done for the last 75 years or so. I'm afraid, boys and girls, that when this collapse occurs, there isn't going to be FEMA and the various government departments to bail Joe out. They've always been there in the past. But then, you know, the bank has always had the money in the past to pay off. But I'm really concerned about, are they going to have the money the next time to pay off? And there's a lot of us out here worried about that, and we're just real concerned. Now, I don't have any money in the stock market, and I don't have any money invested in dollar-denominated investments. And I don't have any debt. So I'm not going to have those problems to be concerned with. That doesn't mean that I'm getting off scot-free. It just means that I'm not going to have 10 problems to solve. I'll have two or three. I can concentrate on three fires instead of 10. All right, so that's what market manipulation is all about. And that's what the repo pool is all about. And that's what gold price manipulation is all about. That's what silver price manipulation is all about. Now, you know, if I buy and sell in the stock market, and if I lose, I take it in the shorts. But if J.P. Morgan buys and sells in the market and they lose, they don't take it in the shorts. They play the game like this. They flip the coin, and if it's heads, J.P. Morgan wins. And if it's tails, then the taxpayers lose. J.P. Morgan only wins, they never lose, only the taxpayers. Well, inflation is really just another tax. It's one of the hidden taxes that we all pay, higher prices. Now, when you're selling short, you have to have control of the printing press in order to sell short and absorb those kind of losses. You see, if I go out into the market and I buy a contract, let's say I buy a wheat contract, and I'm betting on the price of wheat, which is, say, $5 a bushel, and I'm betting on the price of wheat to drop from $5 to $3.50. Well, if the price of wheat goes up and I buy the contract for $3.50, then I've got to pay that difference. It's called a margin call. If I buy on the long side at $5 delivery and the price goes up, I got to pay the margin call. Whatever it is, I got to pay it. Now, I can buy on leverage. In fact, the thing that makes this buying these gold contracts so lucrative is that you can buy a $5,000 contract for 5%. Well, that's only $250. So for $250 cash out of pocket, I can buy a $5,000 gold or pork belly or wheat futures for 1 year delivery down the line. It'll be next July 1st. If the price goes up, I don't lose. In fact, if the price goes from $5 to $6, I can take that same contract, sell it for the $6 for the delivery to some guy that wants to buy it next year because he wants the wheat to go into making bread in his bakery. And he takes the actual wheat, and I take the profit. Let's see. And I put up $250, and I sold it for $6,000. So I pay the $5,000. I make $1,000 profit on $250. So I made four times my investment, didn't I? That's good business. But if the price of wheat goes down from $5 to $4, then I lost $1,000. Well, I only put up $250. So if I want to maintain my position without losing any money, I got to put up $1,000. Now I'm invested $1,250, which is okay. Because now all I got to do is pay the difference between my $1,250 and the $5,000 or $4,000 now because the price went down, because I've already paid that other premium, and take delivery of the wheat. So I haven't lost anything. But where people get involved with these longs and shorts is that they buy one side or the other on margin, but they buy many, many contracts with their $250. They buy 10, 15, 20 of these $5,000 contracts. Now, if one or two of them goes against them, it's no big deal. But if five or 10 of them go against them, they're upside down, unless they got a lot of money. So we think that the banks have to have a lot of money. No, they don't have to have any money at all. The banks never lose. If the price goes up, they sell at a profit. If the price goes down, the taxpayer takes the loss. Heads I win, tails you lose. And that's the way these markets are contrived and controlled. And it's done for your benefit. So I can't see any point in investing in these kinds of markets. They're dishonest. They're unethical. They're illegal and unlawful. They violate the law of Moses, the law of God. And at best, they're going to pay you 5% dividends, which is half the inflation rate. Now, if you can see any logical reason for investing in the Dow Jones, get after it. Just get right in there and get after it. Remember, inflation now is about 10%. How do we know inflation is 10%? Well, the price of gypsum wallboard went up 16% over last year. And the price of copper is up 25% over last year. In fact, copper over the last 5 years went from 80 cents or 84 cents a pound to $3.25 a pound here the other day in 6 years. Lumber is up 12%. Anything that you go to the building materials store to buy is up 10, 12, 14, 16%. And that's from the inflationary policies of 3 years ago, because the inflation that's being created, went out, and put into the economy today won't show itself in the economy for three more years. It takes 3 years for that inflation to show up in price increases. Now, they've been after it now since the stock market collapse, or not collapse, but recession of 2000. So when the market broke in 2000 downward, the government has been working mightily over here to prop everything up, especially stocks and bonds. And they're just mightily and busily trying their darndest over here to control it all. But everybody's pretty well convinced that they're trying to keep too many balls in the air all at the same time, and pretty soon one of them's going to fall. Now, Stephanopoulos didn't return calls for our comment. Now, this is the Washington Post. Stephanopoulos wouldn't talk to the Washington Post about this plunge protection team. The plunge protection team was revealed in a Washington Post story. In a Washington Post story, seems to have been born on March 18, 1988, when President Reagan signed Executive Order 12,631, establishing a working group on financial markets. And at the time, it included the chairman of the various stock exchanges, the chairman and governors of the Federal Reserve, and the secretary of the U.S. Treasury, who was also the chairman. And so the plunge protection team is made up of Wall Street bankers, major bankers like Bank of America and the Treasury Secretary. So you got the administration, the political side, and then you've got the economic side as represented by the banks. And they're going to prop this thing up. They're going to keep it up. Now, the world is tied to the dollar, and the world is in debt just like the United States is. And it's not just for a few billion boys and girls. It's for trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. I mean, our national debt is $8 trillion. The housing bubble, which is about ready to swoon on us, has got another several $10, $12, $14 trillion invested in it. The balance of payments deficit is an imbalance by three-quarters of a trillion. Then your budget deficit, you know, is $350 billion. Your balance of payments is three-quarters of a trillion. And then you got other debts that total trillions and trillions. The total overall estimate is that America owes $149 trillion. Now, everything that we Americans produce in a year is about 11. You got 149 divided by 11. How much is that? If you took everything that we make for the next 13 years and 6 months, that's what it would take to pay it off. Your whole gross domestic product for 13.5 years, and that's just to break even, to get out of debt. Boys and girls, America is not going to get out of debt. You can get out of debt. You, individually and personally, can get out of debt. And that's where you need to be, because when this thing turns turtle, everything that you've got, you're going to lose. That's just how simple that is. You don't have to be a real smart kid to figure that out. That's what happened the last time. That's what happens to everybody that's in debt. When they can't service their debt, they lose. Bottom line, they lose. Hey, we're about out of time again. We'll have to take this up next time here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, which you've been listening to here. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, then.